increased nitrous oxide flux in response to urea fertilizer in semi-arid climate identified by smoothing splen models?
Yeah.
Splen models.
Yeah.
Okay, by presented by Sally Officer.
Good afternoon. Now this is complicated. Most of us know each other, and we all know about Australian cropping. So, but I'll give you the USA translated version a little bit. You're from Canada. Oh well. Oh, okay. Well, this is probably fairly familiar to you as well. We're looking at emissions factors for fertilizer in semi-arid grain systems, so extremely small yield systems, maybe 2 tons to the hectare. And they're only rain-fed, so this is very typical of Australian agriculture because most of the cropping is occurring in areas. They've got the desert in the centre of the country, and then around the edges, quite nice coastal zones, and then the cropping tends to happen in all the areas with... We've got a mouse. Yes, say on the transitional zones between the desert and the coast, and the semi-arid with small rainfall. I was down here in the south. It's classed as semi-arid, although it's a 16-inch rainfall, but it's got enough evaporation to pull it up into semi-arid climate. So it's typically a wheat rotation with canola and legumes. So this is winter cropping. Our mission was to look at our emissions factor, so the IPCC default is 1%, and in Australia they've actually reduced the default or the inventory emissions factor down to 0.3%, and that's actually very generous because a lot of the published data that we do have takes it right down to about 0.04% or lower. So there's only been a couple of studies, and I was going to carried this one out in the southern Victoria Wimmera region. So we had the classic design of no fertiliser treatments versus fertiliser treatments. We were looking at 50 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen, and this was, just as a matter of interest, to set up right beside the experiment that you just saw, the FACE experiment. So it was actually right next door to it. In the first year... we had two fertilised treatments. I could only look at 3 treatments, so we had 2 fertilised treatments, and one of them had one episode of irrigation. Second year, we did it the other way around. We had 2 background treatments without fertiliser, and then just 1 fertilised. So I'll give you a bit of information on the system. This is a very specialised automatic chamber system that only is designed to pick up tiny nitrous oxide emissions. We knew we were likely to be looking at a background of 1 to 2 nanograms per metre squared per second of emissions. We're lucky to get a very nice custom designed system. We had 9 chambers, and we were organised them into 3 replicates, and then because they turn into a very hot sort of glasshouse unit, basically, because they're made of clear plastic and stainless steel, we actually alternate, pick up the whole chamber and move it to those bases that you can see sitting in the ground once a week. Just so we go into cropping, all this turns into crop, the plants grow in the chamber, and we shift the entire unit over just to try and stop the sort of extra warmth and stuff that you get when these chambers close. Each chamber is connected through to the caravan where we have all our analysis gear. So in this system, we were able to close those chambers for 30 minutes at a time, and then we'd have sampling through the chamber every 3 minutes. We needed overrides to pop over, so the chambers opened if we got rain or if it got too hot inside the chamber, and we were constantly sampling back to a standard gas just to get that sort of hyper accuracy that we needed in these really tiny emission systems. We had such an accurate analyzer that we were able to use a relatively large chamber with a base of 0.8 meter by 0.8 meter, and then we kept the chambers accurate by having two fans in each chamber and venting them so that the if the temperature rose, which it did very steeply when they closed, and then you'd have a build-up in air pressure, so they had pressure vents and, of course, automatically operating doors. So in the caravan there, this is a beautifully designed system that Campbell Scientific in the USA put together for us. We had a tunable diode laser hooked up to an automatically switching manifold, so the pump sucked the air in from the chambers all the time, and then the manifold, which is the brass arrangement here, could select one of those ports from a particular chamber and send it on round through the laser, which is in the sitting in here under the white box. This is an extremely accurate system, and it gave us 10 measurements of flux over the half an hour, and then we were able to do our linear regression and also sort out the data so that we, as to whether we had a significant fit or not to that linear regression. So it gave us a superbly accurate system. Now, this is data from any one particular chamber collected from sowing in early June right through to harvest in December, and you can see it looks like a mess. I mean, this is very typical. You're seeing huge. Well, I'm saying huge, but that's relative. You notice our scale only goes up to 12 nanograms per meter squared per second. So we got, I think, a third of a kilogram of nitrous oxide nitrogen off the system over an entire year. So the emissions are indeed small. But if you drill in and look at, this is now a week of data from one particular chamber, you see in actual fact it's correlated over time, so that any measurement that you take at one point in time will be reasonably well related to other measurements around it. So what we can do with that is fit something called a smoothing spline, and that just mathematically sort of fits itself in. It's smoothing, so it's not trying to fit to every single data point, but it is picking up all the main trends. And this is really nice because it actually mathematically feeds straight into linear mixed model analysis. So you can fit splines to each of your sets of data and then run mixed model analysis off it and actually give us a statistical comparison of our treatments. This is an analysis that's been developed actually for rotational experiments over very long periods of time. So I was just lucky to find a statistician that knew about this and was able to fit it to our data. So what did we actually find from that? Well, yes, we actually had a significant effect of fertiliser. It did increase the emissions. And it said we had an interaction between the effect of the fertiliser and the effect of time, which I'm going to explain to you in a minute. And that so that it was saying that not only did the emissions increase, which is what we expected, but also it was able to pick up differences in the amount of time that the emissions were increasing over. So this is what it looks like when you feed it back into a prediction of the treatment average for each treatment, and then it gives you a confidence limit around that predicted treatment mean. So this is, first of all, a no fertilizer set of emissions over the crop period. And then I can overlay that with fertilizer emissions. So the yellow there is our first fertilized treatment in our first year. And you can see that actually the increase in emissions occurred only in the very first 2 months after we put the fertilizer on and the crop was planted over here. And you see it comes up as two distinct sets of peaks. It's which remained a very consistent pattern right throughout the experiment. Notice also still tiny numbers, so a background of sort of 2 to minus 2 nanograms per meter squared per second, and just a small increase up to 8 for our fertilizer on a good day. Second fertilized treatment in the same year, we still got the same You've got the second peak coming through this time, but not the first. But still very much only a significant difference between to background in that very over the first 2 months, and absolutely nothing happening later in the season. These were drought years, so it's a semi-arid system and it's under drought, even though we added a little bit of irrigation where that just before that large peak, actually. You could see no emissions and very little crop growth. In fact, this is the second year. It was even drier in the second year. Farmers typically didn't get to get grain off their crops in the second year. A lot of them cut the crop early for hay. That's how bad it was. Two sets of no fertilizer applied data here, and you can see what was quite nice was no significant difference, even though they had two different backgrounds. One was a pre-rotation of medic, and the other one was field peas. So it did have legume nitrogen in the soil as a source, but it wasn't showing up at all compared to adding fertilizer. So that's what happened when we put in our 50 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen fertilizer. Again, only a response to the fertiliser for the emissions in the first 2 months or so of the season, and then absolutely nothing after that. The gap here is a equipment breakdown. We had no rain, there was just nothing happening, and again, no difference to background. So, but we did get this second set of two distinctive peaks again, and what I think is happening here is that this is nitrified denitrification as we get mainly ammonia sources as the original urea granules break down. And then I think as we start to get a little bit of our winter rain, we get more denitrification as it goes through and forms nitrate from the fertilizers. That's our gaps. Again, I'm just pointing out that these times were really quite consistent. So when you take that through to an emissions factor, what happens? Well, the numbers are small, but statistically they are different, so we're going to be confident about calculating an emissions factor. And the average number that we got off the system was 0.15 of a percent, so that's compared to the normal number that you find in subtropical or temperate systems of 1%. So we've gone down by a factor of 10, and we're a half of the Australian value for rain-fed crops. So what does this say? Well, we're definitely showing now that the IPCC number is not appropriate for our particular system, and in fact I think they're going to go to the IPCC now and ask to reduce the 0.3 down even further, which is really good news for farmers because it brings their liability right down as we go into in Australia. They're going to bring in a carbon tax, so we should be able to say if you're putting on fertiliser in these semi-arid systems, your emissions are going to be really small, and should give us a more accurate inventory as well. So that's my talk as well. Yeah,